Hey listeners, welcome to Trust in Tech, where we have conversations with people helping the internet and society thrive. Alice here. This is the second episode featuring Heather Grunkmeyer, where Heather talks tech policy and what she's most proud of. As a reminder, the views stated in this episode are not affiliated with any organization, and they only represent the views of the individuals. One thing we chatted about earlier was the thing that you've done that you're most proud of. I'd love to hear more about
that. You bet. You get feedback from your community or your users, good, bad, or otherwise, around their experiences with your product. And one use case that I had that needed some focus and investment was members of the community telling us they felt physically unsafe. So this person creeped me out. Nothing had happened. There was no objective evidence that the person was going to do anything. There's tons of bias in there. And what creeps you out is going to be different than what creeps me out and creeps somebody else out. So there's loads of bias. So in that, where our policy was at was to basically just not take action. Like there wasn't something that had occurred that we could take action on. We didn't. And I think that's really common. So I'm not saying that as a ding or anything, but that was the scenario. What I did is manually observed a bunch of users who had been flagged to us as creeping people out. So I just took about 100 people that had creeped somebody out, and I went in and impersonated each one and just looked at their behavior on the platform. Like, is there anything here? Right? Do these users look any different than a good user? And I observed some patterns, particularly with those that had an incident occur. So there was some objective evidence that this person is risky to our community. Okay, this is good. Patterns are good. Patterns mean there is something different at times about a subset of the users that are flagged for being creepy. And what I did was put together a manual, like an ops-based process that the operational agent would go through and do a holistic review of somebody's account and fill out effectively a scorecard that I had created. Now, scorecard is not the right word. What would you call it? It's like a matrix, right? So there were like 15 behaviors that the ops agent was looking for. If those behaviors were observed, you would get a certain number of points depending on the type of behavior that was observed, some being more indicative of a bad actor, others being having a higher false positive rate. And then at the end of that, you would get a point total. And if your point total was over a certain number, we would pause your account and let you know you'd been paused. And then had an appeals framework in place whereby the user could say, hey, I had no idea. I really didn't. Can you please help me understand what I did wrong so I can be meeting your community guidelines and be part of your community versus what a bad actor might look like in that appeals process, which would be, retaliatory in tone. How dare you? I'm going to go after this person. I was like, all right. Yeah. Or if they didn't respond at all within the time period, they were just deactivated. And it was expensive, for an ops agent to go in and manually review each person that was flagged for a signal of this physical in real life harm. So the real severe incidents that we want to prevent to the best of our ability. So that's how I was able to get alignment, was the cost outweighed the benefit, right? Which is, if we can keep one person from doing this kind of thing, it's worth the cost. Yeah, we're able to operationalize that. And it was hard because the bias will be there, right? So if somebody says, you creep me out, depending on my background or your background, like I was saying, creep us out. But having that appeals framework in place that also outlined what a good actor looks like versus a bad actor is how I was able to get it over the line and get sign off eventually.
So what did that appeals look like? So let's say my account is paused because a few people said that I was creepy. And I really don't understand why. How do you tell somebody, people think you're creepy, stop being creepy?
Right. Well, that,
like, that can't be the answer, right? There has to be something else.
Yeah. Well, we would, you know, we had a portion of our community guidelines that was directly related to the behaviors that are acceptable and not acceptable, specifically to being creepy. Obviously, these are in words that are appropriate for the community and others to read. And so what we would do is just say, please confirm that you will agree to adhere to our community guidelines and that you understand the importance of why we have these in place. So we would keep it anonymous, right? We wouldn't want to tip off who reported the person or that sort of thing. So it was very templatized, if that's a word, language in the why you got paused. We wouldn't say it was because you're creepy. We would just say, we paused your account. You know, please confirm that you understand these community guidelines and you agree to them. And then within that, you would see either no response at all or, yes, completely. Thank you for having these guidelines in place in the first place. Versus, who said I didn't do this?
Yeah. Yeah, you can often get a signal from people based on their interactions with staff, especially when you have a community where, you know, it is about social relationships or meeting in person or other things. And I think there's this tenet of the customer is always right, and that customer support or operations people on the front line who are communicating with customers always have to be deferential to customers and say, oh yes, of course, like, you're right, let me placate you, let me help you feel better. And I train my folks to say, hey, if somebody's being rude to you, like, they're probably being rude to other people. If they're being, like, threatening to you, they're going to threaten other people. And so it's a really good signal of how somebody might be interacting in private with your other users. And so definitely something to keep in mind. And, you know, I think all platforms should have escalation protocol and rules in place to say, hey, you know, if somebody is abusing your staff, then they shouldn't be a customer.
And I think similar to your business and the rubber business, you're not providing life-saving services, right? We weren't. So it's one thing to deactivate somebody from, you know, something that's, like, really important to your life, like, I don't know, medical help or translation services in a time of crisis or something like that. It's literally like, well, they're just going to have to find a dog walker elsewhere. So I feel okay about that.
Did you have measures of success for that program? Like, did you have a way of what did success look like for you there when you're implementing it? What was your hope and your way of figuring out if you got there or not?
So the initial pilot was to understand the false positive rate of that policy itself. And it was about a 50-50, which we considered good. So we thought, okay, if half of our work is throwaway, but half is removing members of the community that are potentially harmful, that's worth doing. Broader work I did around our deactivation policy, which this was part of, so just tuning the policy on what's okay and not okay, and all the different types of behaviors. The measure of success there was time between detection and action.
Mm-hmm.
So detection being a user reports the person to us, and then the action being whether you were paused or deactivated. And we did that by type of incident, type of behavior. So this was just one piece of policy work that I did around tightening up all of our deactivation policies. And in some cases, we shortened time between detection and action by up to 300%, which is great. You know, of course, trust is what you're ultimately looking to achieve, but that wasn't a direct metric of this one.
This is something that I think about a lot, and I think there's no great answers for, and I'd love to know your take. in the field of trust and safety, there's trust and there's safety. And so safety is somewhat measurable. You know, different people have different ideas of what safety means. If you have in-person safety versus emotional safety versus, you know, like what does a safe environment mean? There, we could get into that as well. But the trust part, I think, is really, really interesting, because often in our field, there's a lot of focus on the safety part, as there should be, because that's like the more immediate concern. But long term, trust is the thing that is going to help the business succeed, whatever platform you're working for, whatever business you have to have your customers or your advertisers or the government or whoever trust you in order for you to keep operating. And how do you think about gaining trust and earning trust and measuring trust? And does your idea of trust as a trust and safety professional, is that the same thing as platform's idea of trust, like the CEO's idea of trust, or the board member's idea of trust, or the public's idea of trust? How did you think about those things then? And then how do you think about it now as you're like a consultant and working on the outside a little bit? Do you have a different perspective than you used to?
Well, tactically speaking, what I would do is map out each potential investment that we could make on a 2x2 trust and safety, and just plot them out. And so in the planning, we could see, okay, ideally you want to be investing in those things that drive both trust and safety before you even think about what the metrics are and how am I going to be able to measure the degree this is achieving those things. It's like, that's the next thing. But just philosophically, where, if you map out all the potential investments or areas that you can address, what are they indexed towards in terms of trust and safety? And you want to get those that do both. And I just did that from like stakeholder alignment perspective. Like, all right, here's everything we're talking about, looking at. Here's kind of how I see it in terms of where does it, what does it address, trust versus safety versus both? And we'll just start there. Get a mental model of the things we're thinking about and where do they land. And from my experience, I found there's the leadership level easier to gain traction in things that drive trust, because those are going to drive your core business metrics. Core business metrics are trust metrics generally. Growth, repeat, those are trust metrics.
So you think the safety part's actually harder? Interesting. Yeah. I feel like the core business metrics are trust metrics. I agree with that, but I think that where it gets difficult is creating that solid line from my team does thing A, therefore customers trust us more, therefore they stick around longer, or they give us more money, or they, you know, whatever the outcome is. And in my, you know, decade plus years of experience, I have a gut feeling. I'm like, I think this is going to help. Like, I know our, you know, I run customer experience. I know what our customers are feeling. I know what they want. I know what they need. Like, my instincts are telling me this is the thing that we can invest in that will like help them to trust us. And you can't make business decisions based on gut feelings all the time. Like, maybe every once in a while you have a pet project that you can push through because it's not that expensive to run and you can A/B test it and you can see what happens. But, you know, trust is like, I think this is the crux of the issue for me. Trust is an emotional thing, and measuring people's emotions and why they feel that way when the world that we live in is so multifaceted, it's almost impossible to attribute greater feelings of trust to any one initiative. It's going to be a combination, and there's going to be things that businesses do that take away trust, just as there are things that they do to gain trust. And often there's 10 of each happening at the same time. And so having specific measurables for any one of those initiatives, I think is almost impossible because it's all like this big tangled ball of factors.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you're thinking about something that also delivers real safety, you're probably not going to want to A/B test that. Because why would
Yeah, it's like the medical experiments, like you need an ethics board to make sure that, right? Yeah, if you think something's going to be safe, you have to roll it out.
So you're not going to say, I'm going to do a holdout and these people are going to have a less safe experience, I believe, just so I can measure. That wouldn't make sense. So no, I was at Trust. Did you go to TrustCon this year?
Yeah.
Went to probably three different discussions around this very question. And I left each one going, yeah, okay, well, at least there's nothing I'm missing. But you know, one thing you can do is you can understand within the things that you do or you plan to do from a trust and safety perspective, what is the relative order importance of those in your customers' minds? And that was one thing that I did do is I just did some research and said, okay, what do y'all care about besides the marketplace, right? And how likely does that, if this thing was true, increase trust? And so then you've got that survey anecdotal data that says, okay, people really care about this thing. And in fact, if both sides of the marketplace, if you're a two-sided marketplace, care about that thing, you can go, hey, all right, well, if I create, we're doing this already. So in the case of Rover, it was a policy that we spent millions of dollars a year on just because it was the right thing to do to help the community when their pet was injured or hurt, we'd help with those vet bills. But there was just really low awareness that we did it. We're spending all these millions of dollars. And through my research, I found, oh, people really care about this policy. And then I was able to work with marketing and product to raise awareness that it even existed. And so then you can say, okay, well, I still don't know what that's going to do to like our brand health metric or an individual's repeat rate, but I can say this is what they care most about. And I raised awareness of it by X percent. So therefore, in theory, I raised. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can answer your question helpful. With any new news, but.
No, I don't think it was a question expecting a concrete answer. It's more just an observation of how tricky it can be to think about these things in like a holistic kind of level. So let's say you have this, you know, 2x2 grid of trust and safety, and the things that are top of your list are things that you think will help both trust and safety, and the things that users really care about. How do you think about the rest of it? Almost everybody I know who works in this has like this giant big list of things I'd love to do someday that are probably helpful, but not necessarily slam dunk winners. How else do you think about prioritizing those things or getting them prioritized within companies? Or is there enough to do that's like,
I feel like
all the things you already said? So just do those things first.
No, I don't want to say this is just me, right? This is how, and I don't know if this is the right way or the wrong way, but it depends on the nature of the business, right? It really does. So the nature of our business was, you know, frankly, people's children is how animals are, right, to people. And then we've got humans. So we have to be very precious entities that we're responsible for. And so where I really pushed the company was to think about the really, really severe scenarios where it can go wrong and make sure we show up. Because stuff is going to happen. Like fraud's going to happen. You know, people are going to be unhappy about something. There's going to be there's going to be stuff that happens, but the stuff that is really sideways, then you can really lose trust and something can really gain some word of mouth or PR attention, or just really you feel terrible that it happened inside of you. Nailing those edge cases, because then I think when you do nail those edge cases, you get ripple effects to kind of the more, but those benefit the more kind of expected trust and safety use cases that need address. So I over-indexed on the really extreme edge cases from a prioritization perspective. And there's just table stakes stuff too, unfortunately. And that, you know, things like making sure you've got just basic policies in place and your community knows what's expected, and just those little table stakes things that, if they aren't in place, having those be prioritized sort of a prize zero is kind of the approach I took, honestly. It's like, this stuff just needs to happen. Okay, cool. We agreed. Get to it. Whatever order you do, we all agreed it's important. And then, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's end with, consulting, starting your business. And can I also add another layer to that, just to make things harder for you? As you think about doing this, and you know, you've been so open around trying to prioritize your mental health and your well-being, if you have any tips of like ways you've been thinking about that, or things that have been helpful for you that you think might be helpful for other people, I'd love to hear how you've been thinking about that.
You bet. So I just decided to start my own business and just thought, why not? You know, I give myself a year, so just a time box, kind of period of time. And I just made a website, made some business cards, talked to Jeremy Gottschalk, who runs Marketplace Risk, and said, hey. And he's like, hey, you want to come out and like volunteer? And I'm like, yeah. So I volunteered at his summit, and then I got some leads, and just a real, really having fun, just putting myself out there. And it's kind of, it's nerve wracking, but I'm prioritizing just saying yes and seeing where it unfolds. So I think that'd be my one tip, is just say yes and make time for anybody who, even just doing like pro bono work is quite a bit of what I'm doing, honestly. One, because I love it, but two, it also, I'm a big fan of do the job before you get the job. And I would say starting your own business is pretty much like that. Do the job and then you get the job. Mm-hmm. And it's been really interesting to see the type of work I'm getting. And it's not, if you would ask me what I'm great at and where I think I would be like, hey, if you want somebody who does A, B, and C, I'm getting hired for D, E, and F. But enjoying the freedom of it and learning new things and just seeing where it goes.
Yeah.
And I think, so the mental health part, so much is out of our control, right? And I listened to this audible called Living Untethered. It's by a guy named Michael Singer. I don't know if you've heard of it, but literally that audible. There's one thing I could say to anyone is listen to that audible. Listen to it 3 times. And it literally changed my life, because what I found, I get a greater sense of peace the more I acknowledge so many things are out of my control. And reminding myself that what is in my control is my effort and my attitude. Life just gets easier and lighter and a heck of a lot more fun.
I think that's good advice too for anybody who's job seeking in this market as well. And as a ex-recruiter, you're probably very sympathetic to this as well.
Yeah. And the more you prioritize, just like we do in product management or in technology, the more we prioritize learning over the outcome, and you can apply that to your life, just kind of the more fun it gets. Like, oh, okay, well, for example, maybe you just interviewed for a role and you didn't get the role. Well, what did you, I can speak for myself. I've had a few of those recently. So I am parallel pathing interviewing for FD roles. So I don't know what the right thing is, but the more I kind of build that muscle of prioritizing the learning that I achieve every day and not the outcome, the more stuff's just unfolding.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that with job interviews as well, where often it can be so heartbreaking if there's something that you really want and you don't get it. And also, especially if you're not quite sure what you want to do next or where you want to be, or, you know, there's a few different things that you could be doing, interviews are really good at clarifying what you find yourself getting really passionate and excited about, like where you perk up and get, oh my God, I could talk about this for 6 hours, and where you're like, I could do this, but is it really my thing, to like, oh my God, no, a million red flags. And so, you know, even the ones, if you find yourself getting really excited and interested and then don't get it, it can still be really helpful signal for you to think about what else to apply for next and how to use that passion to do something on the side on your own or something else. So they can be really good signals, just personally outside of like somebody handing you the job.
Completely. Yeah. And then the trick there is if maybe you are handed a job, but maybe inside you're like, I don't know if I want it. Being okay with that, being like, oh, you know what? I'm going to wait. Or mm-hmm. I'm going to take this for A, B, and C and let's see how it goes and
be fulfilled elsewhere through something else as well. Yeah. Yeah. There's no shame in working for money and then getting fulfillment elsewhere as well. Well, thanks so much for talking with me. This has been a really fascinating conversation and hopefully it's helpful and interesting to people out there. I definitely had a lot of fun talking to you and you got my brain thinking about a few different things. So thank you so much. It was really, it was a pleasure.
Okay, bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share this episode with your friends. It helps us continue making more episodes for you. I'm Alice Hunsberger. Music by Zhao Shen. Special thanks to everyone at the Integrity Institute for their continued support.